The town may be kind of small, but these folks have big smiles and big hearts. And they know what it is to have simple fun down our way. For old-fashioned singing and homey gatherings make living mighty pleasant.
What the hell was that?
Yeah.
That was my dinosaur of an elder.
I was going to say, yeah. There's a pterodactyl in the room.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, buddy.
This is where we'll test Keith's editing skills.
No, that stays.
It probably will, to be honest
yes,
with you.
Yeah, it's a good way to kick it off, actually.
Keep rolling.
Welcome to Abandoned Albums, the documentary podcast where we take a closer look at some albums that may have been forgotten about over time, some albums you might not even know that existed, and some albums by up-and-coming artists we think you should know about. I'm your host, Keith R. Higgins.
The paper doesn't give many details. Tell me about this.
On this episode of Abandoned Albums, I'm joined once again by the Muffs bass player Ronnie Barnett and Blip guitarist Jeff Calhoun. The three of us are unabashedly Van Halen fans, so I thought it would be fun to have a little roundtable and discuss the one thing that has plagued Van Halen fans for decades now. Was Van Halen, I'm finger quoting here, better with David Lee Roth or with Sammy Hagar? Could Dave have sung the Sammy songs? And could Sammy have sung the Dave songs? I picked a couple of albums for us to talk about. Both are benchmark albums in the incarnation of each band. For the David Lee Roth era of Van Halen, I picked their third album, Women and Children First. And for the Sammy Hagar version of Van Halen, I picked their first album, 5150. And for the benefit of all present and those listening, I ignored the Gary Cherone version of Van Halen. Here's my conversation with Ronnie and Jeff. So today, we're going to talk about Van Halen.
Have you seen Junior's grades?
What was your introduction to Van Halen?
Well, my introduction to Van Halen, like probably most people, was the Atomic Bomb that was the first album release. I don't know where you guys grew up, but I would imagine it was the same on FM radio all over the place. I'm from Houston, Texas, and yeah, that album was all over FM radio. It multiple tracks too. It wasn't like, I know the first single was You Really Got Me, but it seems like almost every track was on the radio. And of course I bought the album. I was 13. I'd never heard anything that sounded quite like it.
The first time I heard You Really Got Me, I was just floored. And then I heard the Kinks version. And I remember telling my brother, I'm like, some stupid band is covering You Really Got Me by Van Halen. And my brother's like, no, they're the original ones. I'm like, they suck. Jeff, how about you? What was your introduction?
When it came out, I was a little kid living in Los Angeles, and it was the first thing I ever asked my parents to buy me, the first piece of music. It was my very first cassette tape was Van Halen 1, and I was obsessed with it. And Eddie is doing something, being beamed in from another planet. Like, he's got an antenna pointed to the sky and is picking up some signal the rest of us are not hip to. Yeah, I've been obsessed with Van Halen my whole life.
In my rock and roll life, there are a couple benchmark moments. I remember when I barely remember the Skynyrd plane crash. I remember that being a big deal on FM radio. I think I was still a little too young for it to sink in. I just knew that it happened. Certainly when John Bonham died, that registered with me, even though I wasn't a Led Zeppelin fan at that point. But when the David Lee Roth split came with Van Halen, that was an existential crisis for me. You know, I don't know. Did you guys feel the same way?
It was a shock at the time, but looking back, we should have seen the writing on the wall, right? Like, you know, the Roth EP, Crazy from the Heat, you know, Shibbly Doodly Bop or whatever. I mean, you know, if we were all paying attention, they weren't exactly smiling as much on stage on the 1984 tour. Things were definitely strained, even from the outside. And but yeah, no, that is one of those remember where you were moments.
Yeah.
I think in hindsight, it probably ranks second for me. Certainly up there as far as things that shook me up. But Cobain's death, like I remember my mother called me at work.
Yeah.
To inform me, like, hey, you need to sit down. And like everybody around me knew that it was going to have that kind of impact. Dave, I think everybody, when they split, the behavior was so erratic that everybody, I think at first kind of rolled their eyes like, he'll be back. Of course he'll be back. It's Van Halen. You can't stay broken up. And then Sammy Hagar comes and you're like, oh, maybe this divorce is going to stick.
We're having a career difference here. We're having a musical difference. And we're going to go our own ways. And we cried and we hugged and he split. And 2 weeks later, I'm reading in Rolling Stone what an asshole I am. And I'm just reading diatribe after harangue, after this, after that, you know, again and again and again. And I still believe it's not necessary to make a comparison. I don't think you have to make a choice, but Van Halen demands it. Van Halen is demanding for the audience to make a choice. You have to either love us and hate him or vice versa. They demand it. Well, I'll rise to the challenge. If we have to have a comparison, then fine. I eat you for breakfast, pal.
One of the reasons I wanted to look at Women and Children first is I think that for me, that and Fair Warning. I think Fair Warning is it's the bastard child of the Van Halen catalog.
Yeah.
But Women and Children first is like that. I feel it's a real departure. This is the first album they named Women and Children First. And there's so much diversity there. And I think the same is true with 5150, because it is such a departure for the band for obvious reasons.
I don't think it is, though. I'll take the counterpoint to that. I think you can see Van Halen's history in almost every song. And the reason that it all ties back is a song like Love Walks In, or Dreams, where I cannot hear David Lee Roth even attempting those songs. Those are Sammy Hagar songs. Musically, they tie back to what Eddie was wanting to do on 1984 with Jump, where he was like, hey guys, synthesizers, now listen to me. I won't play guitar. I'm going to play the synthesizer. And of course, everyone associated with Van Halen's like, that's a shit idea. Right. He wanted so badly to be acknowledged as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. On 84, you start to see him flex his wings a little bit as a writer. And so those kind of power ballady Hagar tunes, I think, tie directly back to that effort on 1984 and Jump specifically.
Definitely. And they're not power ballady. They're power ballads. I mean, Roth would not have sang power ballads like that. He didn't do it in his solo work. And yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Eddie picked up the keyboards. Also a big thing to remember is 5150 came out in 1986. Almost every record sounds of its time from 1986, like trigger drums and blah, blah, blah. And we can get into the production later. I was shocked to find how thin. I haven't heard 5150 in a while, and I don't think it's produced that well. I mean, especially playing it after Women and Children First, and, you know, a big part of that is no Ted Templeman, right? But the late 80s were not kind to record production in general. So everyone is guilty of that. Bob Dylan made a horrible 80s sounding record even. You know what I mean?
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Ronnie, because that is one of my questions. You know, after almost a decade of recording Van Halen albums, it was the production engineering team of Ted Templeman and Don Landy, right? And they split. So this elevated Don Landy to producer. And then they brought in Foreigner founder and guitarist Mick Jones. In what way do you think that pairing helped or hindered the album? Jeff?
I think you get more synth pulled forward in the mix, which is very 1986. I think you get more compression on the drums, which again is of the era. And I don't know that necessarily, I wouldn't say that helped or hurt, because the drumming on 5150 is very in the pocket, with one exception, and that's Get Up, where if you listen to the drumming on Get Up, you're like, oh, this is like I Can't Drive 55 and Hot for Teacher had a car wreck together and had a weird Van Halen TV.
Had a drunken rendezvous.
Yeah.
I think, to Ronnie's point, I think to me, I always equate, because I don't have the experience that you guys have being musicians and being in bands. For me, 5150, and while I like the record, it sounds tinny, shiny. When I listen to Women and Children First, there's a warmth to it, that warmth sound, even despite how hard it is. And forgive the reductive statement, it sounds as though one was recorded in a carpeted room and one was recorded in a non-carpeted room. With Women and Children First being recorded in a carpeted room where it just sounds better, which is not to knock anything against 5150. As you both said, it sounds of the times. And I wonder, should have brought in that, what was Roth's album, Eat 'Em and Smile? Even that sounded better.
Oh, yeah.
Mick Jones just always struck me as odd. Like, they never worked with him again, you know? What did he contribute? What did he do?
He was probably a sounding board for the commercial aspects of the record. That's my guess. You know, they also and I might be wrong on this. I think 5150 is recorded, like, first time recorded in their own, like, kind of studio that they built. You know, maybe equipment, maybe just working on it so hard, like, you know what I mean? Maybe just wearing out those tapes with overdubs, and I don't know, mastering. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can affect the sound of a record, right?
Sure.
It really is, I think, in many ways representative of the ego and ambition. Maybe ambition's better than ego. The ambition that Eddie had for the group, and I think that was externally and internally. I think production-wise, Eddie was looking at what was happening in the studio going, we can do this. We can do this ourselves.
Let's talk about love songs, shall we? Because David Lee Roth is incapable of writing a love song. I think the closest he came was In a Simple Rhyme off Women and Children First. And then we look at 5150 and there are two solid love songs.
Look, arguably Everybody Wants Some as a love song, right? If you're David Lee Roth.
For like David.
That's his idea of a love song. Let's face it.
Absolutely.
He's not going to sing That's What Dreams Are Made Of or whatever.
100%. Yeah. I get a different perspective, you know.
Yeah.
Back to your point, Jeff. Could David Lee Roth have sung any of those songs? And I think that first track, if we look at it track by track on 5150, that intro, I think, is like a real introduction to the band, you know, that
"Hello, baby."
All right, this is an entirely new band.
Yeah.
To me, that was a tip of the cap from the band, like, hey, we're still Van Halen. We're still the band that you love and adore, and we're still going to write songs about eating pussy, because that's what Good Enough is about. It is a 3-minute homage to Dining at the Y.
Oh my God.
I got to listen to that again. It's got a little spoken word part in the middle too, right? Which is, you know, throws back to the Roth era.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's talking about, he's like role playing with the waitress, like, well, what are you serving tonight? Rack of what? I'll have some of that.
Get Up is the song that, like, you can hear, really hear Roth. I could hear Roth doing that one for sure.
Totally. Good Enough is track one. Get Up is track three. In between, you've got Keith, to your point, Why Can't This Be Love? A song that there's zero chance Diamond can sing.
First show we did, I was nervous. I said, what are they going to think? Because we only played the 5150 record, and we played Jump when I brought somebody else up to sing, and we played One Way to Rock, my song. And the rest was just 5150 and Jam. So we walked out on stage, the barricade came down before we played a note. And we looked at each other and went, shit, let's go.
I got to admit, I was not into the record when it came out. But I worked in a mall record store. I've worked in record stores most of my life. Back in that era, when you worked in a mall record store, the promo guys had just, you get calls every night about, hey, I got tickets to whatever it was, Al Jarreau, you know, or whatever. Like, I saw all sorts of stuff. Anyway, I got thrown a pair of tickets for the 5150 tour, and I went just for fun. And I should say this too. I am no Hagar hater. I was a huge fan of Sammy's solo career. Yeah. I saw him in 79 on the Street Machine tour. Dare I say there was no better live act at that time than Sammy. Mm-hmm. He was really big in Texas for some reason. So he was headlining 10,000 seaters. And I've always said that Van Halen kind of ruined Sammy's career, his solo career. Anyway, I go to the show, me and my friend, and you know, it's fine and everything. And yeah, it was mainly 5150. There was nobody sitting behind the stage. Right. So I said to my friend at a certain point, like, hey, let's go sit in the upper deck, you know, behind the stage, just, you know, stretch out our legs and stuff. We go up there. Literally a song later, Sammy is climbing the scaffolding, goes behind, looks at us, points at us. We're the only two people around. We raise our fists. And Sammy is a front man. There's literally hardly anyone better.
I think he works so hard. And I think that's why his solo career was so successful prior to joining Van Halen. I mean, I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and he would come around at least once a year. He would, yeah. He wouldn't, I don't know if he would sell out the arena, but he would certainly fill it. And he worked really hard.
Yes.
No.
Yes. And was entertaining with the music, entertaining between songs, talking, mm-hmm. Working all parts of the crowd, like I said, and won me over. I did like that live show.
Yeah. I did see it. I was chemically imbalanced.
So. Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Those are the things you go to a concert and the guy next to you would just have his head down the whole show. You know what I mean? Like, just a little too much. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beforehand.
Jeff, have you ever seen the band either version live?
They're one of the very few missing notches on my belt.
Not even the reunion tour with Ron?
No, yeah. And I think, you know, I had an opportunity to see the reunion tour. And if I'm being honest, I saw enough clips going around that the cost-benefit analysis of the ticket price versus the quality of the performance failed a little bit for me.
I want to talk a little bit about Michael Anthony and his contributions to the band. About 10 years ago, I don't know if you guys had heard these rumors, that it was always Eddie who played bass on those tracks, and they were slowly beginning to whitewash him off of the website, whitewash Michael Anthony off of the website. And this is after Wolfgang and had joined and they were doing the reunion tours. You guys are both musicians. I don't know. I mean, he played this stuff live. I don't know. I mean, do you have any perspective, any thoughts, any feelings on that?
Michael Anthony is a secret weapon, and anybody who's a fan knows that. Michael Anthony is a great bass player. And yeah, they had two lead singers in the band with him.
That's right.
Let's face it. With so much Van Halen, all we can do is speculate. You know what I mean? Sure. Eddie and Alex are weird. Alex is still weird. I mean, you know, we haven't heard from Alex since Eddie died, right?
No.
Yeah, you hear these like things from Wolfgang. Oh, my uncle. It's up to my uncle. I mean, there's a book by Greg Renoff.
Oh, okay.
Is that his name? About the early years. I mean, I think it was after the first album, possibly the second one, where they made a deal with Michael Anthony, where basically they demoted him and made him a paid member of the band. He did not have an equal share. And those guys are just weird, man. And they just, Eddie's probably like, why do I pay this guy so much money when I could just play the bass? You know? And I'm the one in the studio 24 hours a day. It's probably just as simple as that.
Yeah. It seems like Michael has chosen Sammy in the divorce, so to speak, where Michael Anthony's been a founding member and very loyal member of Sammy Hagar and the Circle.
Yeah, I don't think this is his choice, though, Jeff.
No, well, yeah. agree. And I think part of that was I want to bring my kid in and the whole Wolfgang part of it.
To be fair to Michael playing with Sammy, who would you rather hang out with? Sammy? I mean, I'm sure he has a lot more fun on tour with Sammy than he ever did in Van Halen.
Absolutely.
You know, honest.
I think musical integrity is important to Michael Anthony. I think he's a very musical guy, and that was what he brought to Van Halen. The musicality, the harmonies, you know, the vocal harmony, especially live with so much noise behind you, performing that well, that consistently, is no small feat. And I think that the consistency in performance we observed from him over time, especially in the live setting, is what leads me to believe that I don't buy so much into the Eddie played the bass tracks.
Okay.
I think they're just trying to whitewash him.
Let's do go track by track, and let's look at Women and Children first. And Jeff, I think you mentioned, let's see if Sammy could sing the song, and we'll just do the first track on Women and Children First is "And the Cradle Will Rock." Could Sammy have done that track?
Yeah, Sammy could have sung that.
I think so too. And I just want to say, as far as that track, possibly the best opening of a song and therefore opening of an album ever, right?
Yeah.
That, whatever that effect is, with that. Yes.
And then we toggle over to 5150, and that's "Good Enough." I think we've already established that's not a Roth song. Oh, you know, we did establish.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave could have sang it.
Yeah, I think so too.
It was a gift of his. The weird non-vocal vocal. To open 5150 with
"Hello, baby,"
I thought was so fucking ballsy, because it's like, oh, I can that thing that everybody loves that Dave does, I can do that too. Watch.
Let me ask you guys this. Lyrically, David Lee Roth, I mean, who knows what the hell he's singing about half the time? I don't know, but they worked, right? Whereas Sammy Hagar is more of a verse, chorus, straight up narrative songs.
Yeah.
Do you think that's one of the appeals of why the Sammy Hagar version of Van Halen was more commercially successful?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about this listening to these records, and like, I'm listening to these Hagar lyrics and they're pretty dumb, right? Like, it's about fucking, and he drops 69 in there, you know, and even going to the later Pound Cake and all that stuff.
Yeah.
The dumb album titles they followed this one up with. But you know, and then I'm thinking, well, you know, Roth wasn't exactly it's not exactly intellectual. I don't know. It doesn't stand out to me that like it does in some of these Hagar lyrics, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
So it. I don't know. I'm not like a lyric guy, but when things are dumb, it bothers me, and I'm bothered by a lot of the Hagar lyrics during this era.
Yeah, so. For me, there's nothing left of the imagination. Roth, you don't know what he could be singing about. You know, I mean, it's anybody's guess, but I don't think Sammy didn't have that sort of esoteric quality to him. So let's toggle back to Women and Children First. Track two is "Everybody Wants Some." Ronnie, could Sammy have done that song?
He could have. He definitely could have. And I just want to say, an album that opens with "In the Cradle Will Walk and Rock" and then "Everybody Wants Some," the rest of the album doesn't even have to have anything on it for it to be a good, and it's a great album, right? Sammy definitely could handle this one, yeah. I think.
Well, because "Everybody Wants Some" had exactly what you just described about the structure. Like, it's one of the more verse, chorus, verse type of Van Halen songs of that era. So yeah, I think you could slide Sammy in on that and get away with it.
For sure, especially that last part. Look, I'll pay you for it. What the fuck?
I love that I know right now, I could tell you at least five people that we can send this episode to, and I'm going to be in instant trouble for making claims that Sammy Hagar could have sung anything from Women and Children First.
I think we know the answer to this one. We've already established it, but track two on 5150 is "Why Can't This Be Love?" I think there's no way David couldn't sing that.
I can't picture it.
No.
No, not as it is. No. He would have done maybe something else with it. I mean, look at "Jump," you know? I mean, what are those aren't great lyrics, right?
are 20 words in that song.
Yeah. but it works. It
sure does. Now, "Fools," this, that whole first side of Women and Children First, just brilliant.
Yeah, it's heavyweight boxing for sure.
So, Jeff, do you think Sammy could have sung "Fools"?
That's where I'll depart from my first two and say, I don't know. That's where it's hard for me to envision anyone but Dave singing that tune.
It's true. "Fools" like has got everything Roth era Van Halen all wrapped up into that song, right? Like, you know, the first part and then when it kicks in, and I'm going to agree. I can't see Sammy doing a great job on that one.
One of my favorite parts of that song is Dave. I don't know. What is he doing at the beginning? Trying to do vocal exercises? It's like, Dave, come on. Dave, come on. Get Up. Ronnie, what do you think? If Dave could have done that?
Get Up, yeah. Dave would have handled this one better than any other song on 5150.
Totally.
It's fast, it's upbeat, it sounds like old Van Halen. It does.
Yeah. It is very Hot for Teachery on the drums.
For sure.
You know, very driving with the guitars and lyrically, you know, what is Get Up about? Adrenaline, I guess, ish. You know, I could see Dave doing that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now this, we're going to come to my favorite Van Halen song of all time, Romeo Delight. Jeff, what do you think? Could Sammy have done Romeo Delight?
No.
Ronnie, what do you think?
Again, this is one like, could he have done it? Yes, but no. This is like one of the premier Van Halen songs, right? I mean, if you're a fan, you love Romeo Delight. This is one of two songs on this record too. It was like weird. I was in a band, but I don't know what to call this. These weird time signatures or whatever. Like, you know, it's right. Weird, right? But it hangs together somehow.
That song to me is just a monster.
Absolutely, and they played that the whole rest of their career.
They did, you know? And they should have. And it's just a great song.
It really is. It really is.
Well, I think we've talked about this one, Dreams.
Yeah, no way.
No, that's no,
it's,
Sammy.
It's Sammy and Eddie and Alex and Michael. It's the new Van Halen planting a flag.
This one sounds like the I don't even know what to call the Sammy Hagar solo period right before that, the Geffen era, you know, that where he had half the record would be commercial, right? So that's pure Dreams is pure Sammy Hagar influenced Van Halen. Absolutely.
Accomplishing the same thing Eddie wanted to do. This is Eddie satisfying that itch of I want to be recognized as a songwriter, not just a great trick player.
Yeah. When people like put down the Hagar era Van Halen, which they, as you all know, they do. I always point out Eddie wrote all that music. Like that's not, you know what I mean? Like it's right. Don't blame Sammy. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Or don't give them all the blame. Yeah.
I was never really allowed to play keyboards because a certain person said, hey, you're a guitar hero, man. Nobody wants to see you play keyboards, you know? I'm a musician, basically, and if I write something on a saxophone, I'll play it. Al always tells me this, and I guess it's true, that no matter what instrument I play, it always has an edge to it. So even when I play keyboards in a band and Al and Mike launch in, it still sounds like Van Halen no matter what. You know, take it or leave it, for better or worse, it sounds like us.
Now need... Tora Tora, which is 57 seconds. That's just, it's a bizarre little Van Halen filler. I don't really know.
But as far as Van Halen filler goes, it's pretty good. Like, it's better than Happy Trails, right? Or
Oh, I love Happy Trails.
it's more like an intro for the next song, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Leads right into it. And then track number five on 5150 is Summer Nights, which I think is a great Sammy Hagar song. I don't think there's any way Dave could have sung that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I this is probably the weakest song on the record, right? In my opinion.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. It seems lazy to me.
It is, but I could see Dave doing it. I think just because of the content. I think because it's about chase and tail, you know, hot summer night, trying to get lucky.
Don't say it, Jeff. Eating pussy.
You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. There might be a little eating pussy in there. Yeah.
Yep.
And because of that, I could see. Now, it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the same with Dave, but I could see a Dave version of that tune.
Quick sub question before we go to the next one. Alex Van Halen is a great drummer. He never seems to get the recognition. How hard must it have been to be a good drummer in a band where your brother is arguably considered the greatest rock and roll guitarist in a generation? Do you guys feel the same way about his drumming?
Absolutely. And yeah, when your brother's Eddie Van Halen, you're going to get overshadowed and you're the drummer. Okay. Like, sorry. But Alex Van Halen is a monster drummer. And, yeah, he definitely deserves more recognition. And that's part of I wish he was more, especially now, like out there, like doing drum clinics, doing interviews, like enjoying life, like enjoying your legacy, right?
Well, I agree with Ronnie. He's a beast. And you know what I think held him back? I think one of the things that held him back is that Alex Van Halen was at his best when he was striking as hard as he is capable of. I mean, he's a precise drummer, but he's a really hard hitter. So you're getting, you know, a very energetic, like, upper body performance. Like, he's putting his chest into the drumming. I have zero insight here. This is just speculation, but I can absolutely hear in my head a producer going, "Let's dial it back, Alex. Let's reel that in a little bit. Don't maybe hit quite as hard as you were there." Because when you go back and watch videos of him performing live, the dude is a striker.
Yeah, that's just a symptom of that mid-80s, the late-80s production.
So we'll go to track number six now off Women and Children First.
It's called Loss of Control, which is super extreme. That's like turning everything up to 78, which is, you know how late on a Saturday night or something, you feel like turning everything on to 78 and blowing out all your fuses and then going, ah.
Incredible.
Really?
Yes.
Walk me through that.
Oh, again, like Romeo Delight, it's another one with like some weird tie. It was innovative. It's a very innovative song. It's not a it's weird. I just really like it because it's different, you know.
Jeff, what do you think? Because that's not I don't think that's anything Sammy could have.
I don't think Sammy could have pulled it off. It's, you go back and you listen to that vocal take, And I don't know if you guys are like me, but I envision a mountain of cocaine in the studio that Dave just had access to, right? That's a song that I can hear, like, that is a lot more than a key bump into a good time. I don't know. I think that might sum up the difference between the two for me. Is I really think of Dave as a cocaine guy, and I really think of Sammy as a tequila guy.
Fair enough. Yeah. Getting back to that. Yeah. I couldn't see Hagar handling Loss of Control. But that said, if cocaine is what fueled that performance for Roth, give him more.
So let's go to track number 6 on 5150, Best of Both Worlds. Jeff, is that a track that Dave could have done?
No, and I don't even have to think about it.
Ronnie?
I think he could have. I think it different words. I mean, this is...
Yeah.
I think it's the best song on the record, personally. I know I probably said that about Get Up, too. But yeah, I just think the music, you know, it's fun and stuff. I think it could have been like a fun David Lee Roth track. It would have had a different vocal melody, though. It would not have been the same as the way Sammy handled it. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Anthony is the reason that Best of Both Worlds was a radio hit.
Yeah.
Because of the harmony.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah.
Yeah. Women and Children First. Track number 7 is Take Your Whiskey Home. Ronnie, do you think that's a song Sammy could have ever covered?
I do. I think Sammy's got a little blue. He's got some blues in him for sure.
Yeah.
I like this track. Starts off with, like, you think it's going to be one of those acoustic-y David Lee Roth songs, and it kind of is. And then it turns into a nice little rock song. But yeah. And look, we know the subject matter would be fine with Sammy singing about whiskey.
Yeah.
I think Sammy could have handled that one for sure. But it is very Roth.
Oh, right? Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So,
100%. Jeff, what do you think?
I agree. I think I could sub Sammy in there, and it would be a close approximation.
She don't want me around. She said she's tired of watching me fall down. She wants a good life and all the best, but I like that bottle better than the rest. And she said, I think that you're headed for a whole lot of trouble. Well, I think that you're headed for a whole lot of trouble.
you're headed for a whole lot of trouble if you take your whiskey.
And we go back over to, well, Love Walks In. Yeah, it's Love Walks In. It's track number 7 on 5150.
I want you to imagine David Lee Roth singing "Some Kind of Alien Waits for the Opening, Then Simply Pulls a String and Love Comes Walking In." That shit is not happening.
No, no, no.
No way.
Nope. It's like Dreams. Yeah, yeah. The other, it's, you know, these power ballads, they're pure Sammy influence. And yeah, Roth would can you imagine him stumbling through that, like, and trying to be taken seriously? Yeah.
I can't imagine him agreeing to the song being on the record. In whatever creative process they had, if they ever shot one another down, that's where I could see Roth using his veto power and saying, absolutely not. I'm not singing this shit.
In our band, there is constant back and forth. And at the same time, I think everybody's more than old enough now to really to respect what we've been allowed to do. Conflict was immediate.
From day one.
Not a note out of this symphony's changed. And it is that conflict.
Yeah.
It is that collision, that sound. Mm-hmm. Here's that Japanese shit again. In sumo, that's called tachi-ai. When they collide, boom! You can hear that all the way across the arena. And that's the sound of Van Halen.
Now, here we go. Track number 8 on Women and Children First is Could This Be Magic?
Here's the acoustic-y, bluesy, Ice Cream Man-ish David Lee Roth track. It's great. I think it's fantastic. Could Sammy do it? Maybe, but it would not be as good as this. And again, your Michael Anthony little harmonies. It sounds like you're in the studio with him having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely has that vibe. They captured that moment and that vibe in that song. So it's great. It's a great different color for the record.
Yeah. I don't think Sammy could pull it off.
Now we're up track 8 on 5150, which is the title track, 5150. I don't even remember that song, so I can't.
Oh, I want to pause here. I want to drill in.
You guys can have that one out because I don't remember it.
Eddie has multiple times gone on record as saying that, you know, when asked what does 5150 mean, where does it come from, that 5150 is the section of the welfare and institutions code that allows an adult experiencing a mental health crisis to be involuntarily detained for 72 hours or psychiatrically evaluated for 72 hours. And I don't think it's hard to imagine in the drug-fueled party world of Van Halen that Eddie may have been subjected to a 5150 code. But on the song itself, I think saying, oh, it's about the psychiatric thing, I think he's deflecting, because the song itself seems very much to be about the relationship with Dave. It's very personal.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm with you, Keith. I just listened to this record and I can't remember the song.
Jeff, can you pull up some lyrics and see some of the lyrics? Because it's an interesting perspective. I never would have thought that.
5150 to me, the song, and maybe they're different. Maybe the album is about the psychiatry and the song is about balance and someone who just cannot be satisfied with an equal split. He's talking about you always want one more. You're never satisfied. It's never one for all with you. It's only one for me. So why draw the line? Meet you halfway. And you don't know what he's saying. You don't know what meet you halfway means. I think it's really about Dave not being able to share.
As I was just reading the lyrics, it did the melody did pop into my head. I'm like, okay, yeah.
Are we giving Eddie too much credit for the lyrics? I mean, he didn't really write lyrics, right? And
I have a hard time when that came from Sammy, though. It seems so Eddie. I listen to that song and I hear Eddie talking to us.
As I read the lyrics, I gotta. I don't think you're wrong.
I'm gonna listen to that when we all hang up.
Yeah. Oh, we've all three listened to these albums thousands of times, I'm sure, and we'll leave the podcast today and go listen to them anew for the first time ever with these fresh perspectives.
Right. Sure.
And the last song on Women and Children First is In a Simple Rhyme. In a Simple Rhyme.
Listening to this album again, I didn't remember all the diversity. Some of these Van Halen records after this get a little skimpy, right?
For sure. Yeah.
But In a Simple Rhyme is a great underrated Van Halen track that most, if people are craving to hear some early Van Halen that you haven't heard before, you probably don't recall this song. And I suggest listening to it again.
Well, before I answer, Ronnie, what do you think? Could Sammy have pulled that off?
Not like this. No.
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 Jeff, what do you think?
No. It's probably the least close of everything on that record.
Yeah.
Interestingly, now that I think about it, it's kind of interesting that the disparity between where, you know, if you picked one song on Women and Children First that was the most Dave, I don't know that that's the title that most listeners would pull out.
No.
And yet here we are going, there's no way Sammy could have done it.
I mean, Ronnie, to your point, that's what makes it such a great closer. And to me, that's what makes it such a great song for me, is that it's so uncharacteristically Dave, or so uncharacteristic of Dave to sing something like that.
Right.
Yes. And the title too, right?
Yeah. And then Inside is the last song on 5150.
The total opposite.
Yeah.
It is an homage to Dave. You could close your eyes and tell yourself, this is David Lee Roth. And believe it a little, I think.
Yep, definitely.
And, you know, the talking, the goofing around, you know, you can almost hear the mountain of cocaine in the studio there. And they're just cackling, you know, perhaps some mushrooms or some mescaline, because that laugh only comes out of someone that's having a psychedelic experience.
Yeah.
It's total wild. You know, party vibe with them just shooting the shit in the studio. And then this weird little kind of half a song to close the record.
Yeah. It's got the swing and the swagger and the fun of the early Van Halen. Whereas like most of the record is a little labored over, right? For better or worse. It's a great closer, because it's just a little fun thing. And, definitely Dave would be great on that one.
But let me ask you one. Let me guys ask you one final question. There's no right or wrong answer. But we've all three established that we're Van Halen fans. We've all three established that there is no animosity towards the Sammy Hagar version of Van Halen. That being said, Jeff, when you go back to listen to Van Halen, which era do you go to?
I think anybody that says that they don't reach for Dave first is disingenuous.
Yeah, it's going to be Roth for sure. That stuff still sounds classic, whereas the Hagar stuff sounds a little of its era, or sounds a lot of its era.
There's an interesting cinematic litmus test that you can apply to people. If you ask somebody between Alien and Aliens, which one did you see first? Whichever one of those two films a person saw first is going to be their favorite every time. If you saw Aliens and then went back and saw the original, you probably like Aliens better. I think it's true of Van Halen as well.
It was fun. I got to tell you, that was the greatest time in my musical career.
You guys had, especially with Van Halen in the early days, you guys had a massive impact on culture. Does it ever freak you out?
I don't think of it as impact. That's a result. Mm. What's the verb? Contribution. Here's my favorite poem. I saw it inscribed on a rock by an anonymous poet at the base, just short of base camp on Everest. Go, climb the treasure mountain. Do not return empty-handed. Where are you now?
In my head, I had this, you know, like presidential debate, but fuck right. That. I mean, that's not...
This was my litmus test, by the way, for my now wife when we were dating. I said, let's listen to 5150, and I want to go through it, and you tell me who would have been better for the song.
Well, we are at time. Ronnie, thank you very much. Have a nice holiday.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on again.
Jeff, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah. Good to see you again.
All right, guys.
Bye.
All right, y'all.
All of the songs you heard during this podcast were taken from Van Halen's Women and Children First and 5150. You can stream the entire Van Halen catalog wherever you stream your favorite music. Be sure to check out the show's notes section, where you'll find links to all the audio that was used during this podcast. Many thanks to Ronnie Barnett and Jeff Calhoun.
Our theme song is Rocket Sled by Blip. Abandoned Albums was recorded at Thunder Love Studios. Produced and written by Keith R. Higgins. Engineered and mixed by Steve Beasley with the help of Mike Hunt. Edited by AJ Royce.
Original music by Mike Pellegrino.
If you like what you've heard, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating. It really does help. Thanks for listening.
At Twitter, we are at Abandoned Albums. And on Instagram, we are at Abandon_albums.
Grazie.
Daily Leaf. Rob Janicki. Mike Pellegrino. Therina Vella. Ronnie Barnett. S.W. Loudon, Michael Janicki, Peyton Janicki, and our executive producer.
This is Thunder Love.
And now, until we meet again next time, I remain as always obediently yours.
Abandoned Albums is a production of Paw Print Media.